One error per program. Go. Everyone starts frantically tapping at their screens. Eric leans over to me and says, "Did your stiff house even have a computer for?" "No," I say. "Well, you see, this is how you open a file," he says with an exaggerated tap on the file on his screen. "See? It looks like paper, but it's really just a picture on a screen. You know what a screen is, right?" "Shut up," I say as I open the test. I stare at the first program. "It's like learning a language," I say to myself. "Everything has to start in the right order and finish in the reverse order. Just make sure that everything is in the right place." I don't start at the beginning of the code and make my way down. Instead, I look for the innermost kernel of code inside all the wrappers. There, I notice that the line of code finishes in the wrong place. I mark the spot and press the arrow button that will allow me to continue the exam if I'm right. The screen changes, presenting me with a new program. I raise my eyebrows. I must have absorbed more than I thought. I start the next one in the same way, moving from the center of the code to the outside, checking the top of the program with the bottom, paying attention to quotation marks and periods and backslashes. Looking for code errors is strangely soothing, just a way of making sure that the world is still in the same order it's supposed to be, and as long as it is, everything will run smoothly. I forget about all the people around me, even about the skyline beyond us, about what finishing this exam will mean. I just focus on what's in front of me, on the tangle of words on my screen. I notice that Eric finishes first long before anyone else looks ready to complete their exam, but I try not to let it worry me, even when he decides to stay next to me and look over my shoulder as I work. Finally, I touch the arrow button and a new image pops up. "Exam complete," it says. "Good job," Lauren says, when she comes by to check my screen. "You're the third one to finish." I turn toward Eric. "Wait," I say, "weren't you about to explain what a screen was?" "Obviously, I have no computer skills at all, so I really need your help." He glowers at me, and I grin. My apartment door is open when I return. Just an inch, but I know I closed it before I left. I nudge it open with the toe of my shoe and enter with a pounding heart, expecting to find an intruder rifling through my things, though I'm not sure who. One of Janine's lackeys searching for evidence that I'm different in the same way Amar was, maybe? Or Eric, looking for a way to ambush me. But the apartment is empty and unchanged. Unchanged except for the piece of paper on the table. I approach it slowly, like it might burst into flames or dissolve into the air. There's a message written on it in small, slanted handwriting. "On the day you hated most, at the time when she died, in the place where you first jumped on." At first the words are nonsense to me, and I think they're a joke, something left here to rattle me. And it worked because I feel unsteady on my feet. I sit in one of the rickety chairs, hard, without moving my eyes from the paper. I read it over and over again, and the message starts to take shape in my mind. "In the place where you first jumped on." That must mean the train platform I ascended after I had just joined Dauntless. "At the time when she died, there's only one she this could be. My mother. My mother died in the dead of night, so that by the time I awoke, her body was already gone. Whisked away by my father and his abnegation friends. Her time of death was estimated to be around 2 in the morning, he said. "On the day you hated most." That's the hardest one. Is it referring to a day of the year, a birthday, or a holiday? None of those are coming up, and I don't see why someone would leave a note that far in advance. It must be referring to a day of the week. But what day of the week did I hate most? That's easy. Council meeting days, because my father was out late and would return home in a foul mood. Wednesday, 2 a.m., at the train platform near the hub. That's tonight. and there's only one person in the world who would know all that information. Marcus. I'm clutching the folded piece of paper in my fist, but I can't feel it. My hands have been tingling and mostly numb since I first thought his name. I left my apartment door wide open, and my shoes are untied. I move along the walls of the pit without noticing how high up I am, and run up the stairs to the pyre without even feeling tempted to look down. Zeke mentioned the control room's location in passing a few days ago. I can only hope he's still there now, because I'll need his help if I want to access the footage of the hallway outside my apartment. I know where the camera is, hidden in the corner where they think no one will notice it. Well, I noticed it. My mother used to notice things like that, too. When we walked through the abnegation sector, just the two of us, she would point out the cameras, hidden in the bubbles of dark glass or fixed to the edges of buildings. She never said anything about them or seemed worried about them, but she always knew where they were. And when she passed them, she made a point to look directly at them, as if to say, "I see you too." So I grew up searching, scanning, watching for details in my surroundings. I ride the elevator to the fourth floor, then follow signs for the control room. It's down a short corridor and around the bend, the door wide open. A wall of screens greets me. A few people sit behind it at desks, and then there are other desks along the walls where more people sit, each one with a screen of their own. The footage rotates every 5 seconds, showing different parts of the city. The Amity Fields, the streets around the hub, the Dauntless Compound, even the Merciless Mart with its grand lobby. I glimpse the abnegation sector on one of the screens, then pull myself out of the daze looking for Zeke. He's sitting at a desk on the right wall, typing something into a dialogue box on the left half of his screen, while footage of the pit plays on the right half. Everyone in the room is wearing headphones, listening, I assume, to whatever they're supposed to be watching. "Zeke," I say quietly. Some of the others look at me as if scolding me for intruding, but no one says anything.
"Hey," he says. "I'm glad you came. I'm bored out of my..." "What's wrong?"
He looks from my face to my fist, still clenched around the piece of paper. I don't know how to explain, so I don't try. "I need to see footage from the hallway outside my apartment," I say, "from the last 4 or so hours. Can you help?"
"Why?"
Zeke says.
"What happened?"
"Someone was in my place," I say. "I want to know who it was." He looks around, checking to make sure no one is watching or listening.
"Listen, I can't do that. Even we aren't allowed to pull up specific things unless we see something weird. It's all on a rotation.
You owe me a favor, remember?" I say. "I would never ask unless it was important."
"Yeah, I know."
Zeke looks around again, then closes the dialogue box he had open and opens another one. I watch the code he types in to call up the right footage, and I'm surprised to find that I understand some of it after the day's lesson. An image appears on the screen of one of the dauntless corridors near the cafeteria. He taps it, and another image replaces it, this one of the inside of the cafeteria. The next one is of the tattoo parlor, then the hospital. He keeps scrolling through the dauntless compound, and I watch the images as they go past, showing momentary glimpses of ordinary dauntless life. People playing with their piercings as they wait in line for new clothing. People practicing punches in the training room. I see a flash of Max in what appears to be his office, sitting in one of the chairs, a woman sitting across from him. A woman with blonde hair tied back in a tight knot. I put my hand on Zeke's shoulder. "Wait." The piece of paper in my fist seems a little less urgent. "Go back." He does, and I confirm what I suspected. Janine Matthews is in Max's office, a folder in her lap. Her clothes are perfectly pressed, her posture straight. I take the headphones from Zeke's head, and he scowls at me but doesn't stop me. Max's and Janine's voices are quiet, but I can still hear them.
"I've narrowed it down to 6, Max is saying.
I'd say that's pretty good for, what, the second day?
This is inefficient, Janine says. We already have the candidate. I ensured it. This was always the plan.
You never asked me what I thought of the plan. And this is my faction, Max says tersely. I don't like him. And I don't want to spend all my days working with someone I don't like. So you'll have to let me at least try to find someone else who meets all the criteria.
Fine, Janine stands, pressing her folder to her stomach. But when you fail to do so, I expect you to admit it. I have no patience for dauntless pride.
Yeah, because the erudite are the picture of humility, Max says sourly.
Hey, Zeke hisses. My supervisor is looking. Give me back the headphones.
He snatches them from my head, and they snap around my ears in the process, making them sting.
You have to get out of here or I'll lose my job, Zeke says.
He looks serious and worried. I don't object, even though I didn't find out what I needed to know. It was my own fault for getting distracted anyway. I slip out of the control room, my mind racing, half of me still terrified at the thought that my father was in my apartment, that he wants me to meet him alone on an abandoned street in the middle of the night. The other half, confused by what I just heard.
We already have the candidate. I ensured it. They must have been talking about the candidate for Dauntless Leadership.
But why is Janine Matthews concerned with who is appointed as the next leader of Dauntless? I make it all the way back to my apartment without noticing, then sit on the edge of the bed and stare at the opposite wall. I keep thinking separate but equal frantic thoughts.
Why does Marcus want to meet with me?
Why are the erudite so involved in Dauntless politics?
Does Marcus want to kill me without witnesses? Or does he want to warn me about something? Or threaten me? Who was the candidate they were talking about?
I press the heels of my hands to my forehead and try to calm down, though I feel each nervous thought like a prickle at the back of my head. I can't do anything about Max and Janine now. What I have to decide now is whether I'm going to this meeting tonight.
On the day you hated most. I never knew that Marcus even noticed me.
Noticed the things I liked or hated.
He just seemed to view me as an inconvenience. An irritant. But didn't I learn a few weeks ago that he knew the simulations wouldn't work on me? And he tried to help me stay out of danger? Maybe despite all the horrible things he's done and said to me, there's a part of him that is actually my father. Maybe that's the part of him that's inviting me to this meeting. And he's trying to show me by telling me he knows me. He knows what I hate, what I love, what I fear. I'm not sure why that thought fills me with such hope when I've hated him for so long. But maybe, just as there's a part of him that's actually my father, there's also a part of me that's actually his son.
The sun's heat is still coming off the pavement at 1:30 in the morning when I leave the Dauntless compound. I can feel it on my fingertips. The moon is covered in clouds, so the streets are darker than usual. But I'm not afraid of the dark or the streets. Not anymore. That's one thing beating up a bunch of Dauntless initiates can teach you. I breathe in the smell of warm asphalt and set off at a slow run, my sneakers slapping the ground. The streets that surround the Dauntless sector of the city are empty. My faction lives huddled together like a pack of sleeping dogs. That's why, I realize, Max seems so concerned about my living alone. If I'm really Dauntless, shouldn't I want my life to overlap with theirs as much as possible? Shouldn't I be looking for ways to fold myself into my faction until we are inextricable? I consider it as I run. Maybe he's right. Maybe I'm not doing a very good job of integrating myself. Maybe I'm not pushing myself hard enough. I find a steady rhythm, squinting at the street signs as I pass them to keep track of where I'm going. I know when I reach the ring of buildings the factionless occupy because I can see their shadows moving around behind blacked out and boarded up windows. I move to run under the train tracks, the latticed woods stretching out far ahead of me,
and curving away from the street. The hub grows larger and larger in my sight as I get closer. My heart is pounding, but I don't think it's from the running. I stop abruptly when I reach the train platform, and as I stand at the foot of the stairs catching my breath, I remember when I first climbed these steps. The sea of hooting Dauntless moving around me, pressing me forward. It was easy to be carried by their momentum then. I have to carry myself forward now. I start to climb, my footsteps echoing on the metal. And when I reach the top, I check my watch. 2 o'clock. But the platform is empty. I walk back and forth over it to make sure no dark figures are hiding in dark corners. A train rumbles in the distance, and I pause to look for the light fixed to its nose. I didn't know the trains ran this late. All power in the city is supposed to shut off after midnight to conserve energy. I wonder if Marcus asked the factionless for a special favor. But why would he travel on the train? The Marcus Eaton I know would never dare to associate himself so closely with Dauntless. He would sooner walk the streets barefoot. The train light flashes just once before it careens past the platform. It pounds and churns, slowing but not stopping, and I see a person leap from the second-to-last car, lean and lithe. Not Marcus. A woman. I squeeze the paper tighter into my fist, and tighter until my knuckles ache. The woman strides toward me, and when she's a few feet away, I can see her. Long, curly hair, prominent hooked nose, black Dauntless pants, gray abnegation shirt, brown amity boots. Her face is lined, worn, thin, but I know her. I could never forget her face. My mother, Evelyn Eaton. Tobias, she breathes, wide-eyed, like she's as stunned by me as I am by her. But that's impossible. She knew I was alive. But I remember how the urn containing her ashes looked as it stood on my father's mantle, marked with his fingerprints. I remember the day I woke to a group of grave-faced abnegation in my father's kitchen, and how they all looked up when I entered, and how Marcus explained to me, with sympathy I knew he didn't feel, that my mother had passed in the middle of the night, complications from early labor and a miscarriage. She was pregnant? I remember asking. Of course she was, son. He turned to the other people in our kitchen. Just shock, of course. Bound to happen with something like this. I remember sitting with a plate full of food in the living room, with a group of murmuring abnegation around me, the whole neighborhood packing my house to the brim and no one saying anything that mattered to me.
I know this must be alarming for you, she says.
I hardly recognize her voice. It's lower and stronger and harder than my memories of her. And that's how I know the years have changed her. I feel too many things to manage, too powerfully to handle. And then suddenly, I feel nothing at all.
You're supposed to be dead, I say.
Flat. It's a stupid thing to say. Such a stupid thing to say to your mother when she comes back from the dead. But it's a stupid situation.
I know,
she says. And I think there are tears in her eyes, but it's too dark to tell.
I'm not.
Obviously. The voice coming from my mouth is snide, casual. Were you ever even pregnant?
Pregnant? Is that what they told you? Something about dying in childbirth?
She shakes her head.
No, I wasn't. I had been planning my exit for months. I needed to disappear.
I thought he might tell you when you were old enough. I let out a short laugh like a bark. You thought that Marcus Eaton would admit that his wife left him? To me?
You're his son.
Evelyn says, frowning. He loves you. Then all the tensions of the past hour, The past few weeks, the past few years builds inside me, too much to contain. And I really laugh, but it comes out sounding strange, mechanical. It scares me, even though I'm the one doing it.
You have a right to be angry that you were lied to, she says. I would be angry too. But Tobias, I had to leave.
I know you understand why.
She reaches for me and I grab her wrist, push her away. Don't touch me.
All right. All right.
She puts her palms up and backs away.
But you do understand. You must.
What I understand is that you left me alone in a house with a sadistic maniac, I say. It looks like something inside her is collapsing. Her hands fall to her sides like two weights. Her shoulders slump. Even her face goes slack as it dawns on her what I mean. What I must mean. I cross my arms and put my shoulders back, trying to look as big and strong and tough as possible. It's easier now, in dauntless black, than it ever was in abnegation gray. And maybe that's why I chose Dauntless as a haven. Not out of spite, not to hurt Marcus, but because I knew this life would teach me a stronger way to be.
I...
She starts. Stop wasting my time. What are we doing here? I toss the crumpled note on the ground between us and raise my eyebrows at her. It's been 7 years since you died. And you never tried to do this dramatic reveal before, so what's different now? At first she doesn't answer. Then she pulls herself together, visibly, and says,
We, the factionless, like to keep an eye on things. Things like the choosing ceremony. This time, our eye told me that you chose Dauntless. I would have gone myself, but I didn't want to risk running into him. I've become kind of a leader to the factionless. And it's important that I don't expose myself.
I taste something sour.
Well, well, I say. What important parents I have. I'm so very lucky. This isn't like you, she says. Is even a part of you happy to see me again?
Happy to see you again? I say. I barely remember you, Evelyn. I've almost lived as long without you as I did with you.
Her face contorts. I wounded her. I'm glad.
When you chose Dauntless, she continues slowly, I knew it was time to reach out to you. I've always been planning to find you after you chose and you were on your own so that I could invite you to join us.
Join you, I say. Become factionless? Why would I want to do that?
Our city is changing, Tobias.
It's the same thing Max said yesterday.
The factionless are coming together. And so are Dauntless and Erudite. Sometime soon, everyone will have to choose a side. And I know which one you would rather be on. I think you can really make a difference with us.
You know which one I'd rather be on? Really, I say. I'm not a faction traitor. I chose Dauntless. That's where I belong.
You aren't one of those mindless, danger-seeking fools, she snaps. Just like you weren't a suffocated, stiff drone. You can be more than either, more than any faction.
You have no idea what I am or who I can be, I say. I was the first ranked initiate. They want me to be a dauntless leader.
Don't be naive, she says, narrowing her eyes at me. They don't want a new leader. They want a pawn they can manipulate. That's why Janine Matthews frequents Dauntless headquarters. That's why she keeps planting minions in your faction to report on their behavior. You haven't noticed that she seems to be aware of things she has no right to be aware of? That they keep shifting Dauntless training around, experimenting with it? As if the Dauntless would ever change something like that on their own.
Amar told us the fear landscapes didn't usually come first in Dauntless initiation, that it was something new they were trying, an experiment. But she's right. The Dauntless don't do experiments.
If they were really concerned with practicality and efficiency, they wouldn't bother teaching us to throw knives. And then there's Amar, turning up dead. Wasn't I the one who accused Eric of being an informant? Haven't I suspected for weeks that he was still in touch with the erudite? Even if you're right, I say, and all the malicious energy has gone out of me. I move closer to her. Even if you're right about Dauntless, I would never join you. I try to keep my voice from wavering as I add, and I never want to see you again. I don't believe you, she says quietly. I don't care what you believe. I move past her, toward the stairs I climbed to get up to the platform. She calls after me.
If you change your mind, any message given to one of the factionless will go to me.
I don't look back. I run down the stairs and sprint down the street away from the platform. I don't even know if I'm moving in the right direction. Just that I want to be as far away from her as possible. I don't sleep. I pace my apartment, frantic. I pull the remnants of my abnegation life out of my drawers and dump them in the trash. The ripped shirt, the pants, the shoes, the socks, even my watch. At some point around sunrise, I hurl the electric shaver against the shower wall, and it breaks into several pieces. An hour after daybreak, I walk to the tattoo parlor. Tori is already there. Well, there might be too strong a word, because her eyes are swollen from sleep and unfocused, and she's just started on her coffee.
Something wrong? She said. I'm not really here. I'm supposed to go for a run with Bud, that maniac.
I'm hoping you'll make an exception, I say.
Not many people come in here with urgent tattoo requests, she says.
There's a first time for everything.
Okay.
She sits up, more alert now.
You have something in mind?
You had a drawing in your apartment when we walked through it a few weeks ago. It was of all the faction symbols together. Still have it? She stiffens.
You weren't supposed to see that.
I know why I wasn't supposed to see it. Why that drawing isn't something she wants made public. It suggests leanings towards other factions instead of asserting Dauntless supremacy like her tattoos are supposed to. Even established Dauntless members are worried about seeming Dauntless enough. And I don't know why that is. What kind of threats are leveled at people who could be called faction traitors? But that's exactly why I'm here. That's sort of the point, I say. I want that tattoo. I thought of it on the way home, while I was cycling through what my mother said, over and over again. You can be more than either. More than any faction. She thought that in order to be more than any faction, I would have to abandon this place, and the people who have embraced me as their own. I would have to forgive her, and let myself be swallowed by her beliefs and her lifestyle. But I don't have to leave. And I don't have to do anything I don't want to do. I can be more than any faction right here in Dauntless. Maybe I already am more, and it's time to show it. Tori looks around, her eyes jumping up to the camera in the corner, one I noticed when I walked in. She is the type who notices cameras, too.
It was just a stupid drawing, she says loudly. Come on, you're clearly upset. We can talk about it. Find something better for you to get.
She beckons me to the back of the parlor, through the storage room behind it, and into her apartment again. We walk through the dilapidated kitchen to the living room, where her drawings are still stacked on the coffee table. She sorts through the pages until she finds a drawing like the one I was talking about. The Dauntless flames being cupped by abnegation hands. The amity tree roots growing beneath an erudite eye, which is balanced under the candor scales. All the faction symbols stacked on top of each other. She holds it up, and I nod.
I can't do this in a place that people will see all the time, she says. That'll make you a walking target, a suspected faction traitor.
I want it on my back, I say, covering my spine. The hurts from my last day with my father are healed now, but I want to remember where they were. I want to remember what I escaped for as long as I live.
You really don't do things halfway, do you? She sighs.
It'll take a long time. Several sessions. We'll have to do them in here after hours because I'm not going to let those cameras catch it, even if they don't bother to look in here most of the time.
Fine, I say.
You know, the kind of person who gets this tattoo is probably the kind that should keep it very quiet, she says, looking at me from the corner of her eye. Or else, someone will start thinking they're divergent.
Divergent?
That's a word we have for people who are aware during simulations, who refuse categorization, she says. A word you don't speak without care, because those people often die in mysterious circumstances.
She has her elbows resting on her knees, casual, as she sketches the tattoo I want on transfer paper. Our eyes meet, and I realize. Amar. Amar was aware during simulations. And now he's dead. Amar was divergent. And so am I.
Thanks for the vocabulary lesson, I say.
No problem.
She returns to her drawing.
I'm getting the feeling you enjoy putting yourself through the ringer.
So? I say.
Nothing.
It's just a pretty dauntless quality for someone who got an abnegation result. Her mouth twitches.
Let's get started. I'll leave a note for Bud. He can jog alone just this once.
Maybe Tori is right. Maybe I do enjoy putting myself through the ringer. Maybe there is a masochistic streak inside me that uses pain to cope with pain. The faint burning that follows me to my next day of leadership training certainly makes it easier to focus on what I'm about to do instead of on my mother's cold, low voice, and the way I pushed her away when she tried to comfort me. In the years after her death, I used to dream that she would come back to life in the middle of the night and run a hand over my hair and say something comforting but nonsensical like, "It will be all right," or "It will get better someday." But then I stopped allowing myself to dream, because it was more painful to long for things and never get them than to deal with whatever was in front of me. Even now I don't want to imagine what reconciling with her would be like, what having a mother would be like. I'm too old to hear comforting nonsense anymore. Too old to believe that everything will be all right. I check the top of the bandage that protrudes over my collar to make sure it's secure. Tori outlined the first two symbols this morning, Dauntless and Abnegation, which will be larger than the others because they are the faction I chose and the faction I actually have aptitude for, respectfully. At least I think I have aptitude for abnegation, but it's hard to be sure. She told me to keep them covered. The dauntless flame is the only symbol that shows with my shirt on, and I'm not in a position to remove my shirt in public very often, so I doubt that will be a problem. Everyone else is already in the conference room, and Max is speaking to them. I feel a kind of reckless weariness as I walk through the door and take my seat. Evelyn was wrong about quite a few things, but she wasn't wrong about the Dauntless. Janine and Max don't want a leader of Dauntless. They want a pawn. And that's why they're selecting from the youngest of us, because young people are easier shaped than molded. I will not be molded and shaped by Janine Matthews. I will not be a pawn. Not for them, and not for my mother, and not for my father. I will not belong to anyone but myself.
Nice of you to join us, Max says. Did this meeting interrupt your sleep?
The others titter with laughter, and Max continues.
As I was saying, today I would like to hear your thoughts about how to improve Dauntless. The vision you have for our faction in the coming years. He says. I'll be meeting with you in groups by age. The oldest first. The rest of you, think of something good to say.
He leaves with the three oldest candidates. Eric is right across from me, and I notice that he has even more metal in his face than the last time I saw him. Now there are rings through his eyebrows. Soon he's going to look more like a pincushion than a human being. Maybe that's the point. Strategy. No one looking at him now could ever mistake him for being erudite.
Do my eyes deceive me, or are you really late because you were getting a tattoo?
He says, pointing to the corner of the bandage that's visible just over my shoulder.
Lost track of time, I say. A lot of metal appears to have attached itself to your face recently. You may want to get that checked out.
Funny, Eric says. Wasn't sure someone with your background could ever develop a sense of humor. Your father doesn't seem like the type to allow it.
I feel a stab of fear. He's dancing awfully close to saying my name in front of this room full of people, and he wants me to know it. He wants me to remember that he knows who I am, and that he can use it against me whenever he pleases. I can't pretend that it doesn't matter to me. The power dynamic has shifted, and I can't make it shift back.
I think I know who told you that, I say.
Janine Matthews knows both my name and my alias. She must have given him both.
I was already fairly sure, he says in a low voice. But my suspicions were confirmed by a credible source.
Yes.
You aren't as good at keeping secrets as you think.
For? I would threaten him. Tell him that if he reveals my name to the Dauntless, I'll reveal his lasting connections to Erudite. But I don't have any evidence. And the Dauntless dislike abnegation more than Erudite anyway. I sit back in my chair to wait.
The others file out as they're called, and soon we're the only ones left. Max makes his way down the hallway, then beckons to us from the door without a word. We follow him back to his office, which I recognize from yesterday's footage of his meeting with Janine Matthews. I use my memory of that conversation to steel myself against what's coming next.
So,
Max folds his hands on his desk, and again I'm struck by how strange it is to see him in such a clean, formal environment. He belongs in a training room, hitting a bag or next to the pit, leaning over the railing, not sitting at a low wooden table surrounded by paper. I look out the window of the pyre at the Dauntless sector of the city. A few yards away I can see the edge of the hole I jumped into when I first chose Dauntless, and the rooftop that I stood on just before that.
I chose Dauntless, I told my mother yesterday. That's where I belong.
Is that really true?
Eric, let's begin with you,
Max says.
Do you have ideas for what might be good for Dauntless moving forward?
I do, Eric sits up. I think we need to make some changes, and I think they should start during initiation.
What kind of changes do you have in mind?
Dauntless has always embraced a spirit of competition, Eric says. Competition makes us better. It brings out the best, strongest parts of us. I think initiation should foster that sense of competition more than it currently does, so that it produces the best initiates possible. Right now, initiates are competing only against the system, striving for a particular score in order to move forward. I think they should be competing against each other for spots in Dauntless.
I can't help it. I turn and stare at him. A limited number of spots? In a faction? After just 2 weeks of initiation training?
And if they don't get a spot?
They become factionless, Eric says.
I swallow a derisive laugh. Eric continues.
If we believe that Dauntless truly is the superior faction to join, that its aims are more important than the aims of other factions, then becoming one of us should be an honor and a privilege, not a right. Are you kidding? I say, unable to contain myself any longer. People choose a faction because they value the same things that faction values, not because they're already proficient in what that faction teaches. You'd be kicking people out of Dauntless just for not being strong enough to jump on a train or win a fight. You would favor the big, strong, and reckless more than the small, smart, and brave. You wouldn't be improving Dauntless at all.
I'm sure the small, smart ones would be better off in Erudite, or as little gray-clad stiffs, Eric says with a wry smile.
And I don't think you're giving our potential new Dauntless members enough credit for. This system would favor only the most determined.
I glance at Max. I expect him to look unimpressed by Eric's plan, but he doesn't. He's leaning forward, focused on Eric's pierced face like something about it has inspired him.
"This is an interesting debate," Max says. "Four, how would you improve Dauntless if not by making initiation more competitive?"
I shake my head, looking out the window again. "You aren't one of those mindless, danger-seeking fools," my mother said to me. "But those are the people Eric wants in Dauntless. Mindless, danger-seeking fools. If Eric is one of Janine Matthews' lackeys, then why would Janine encourage him to propose this kind of plan?" Oh. Because mindless, danger-seeking fools are easier to control, easier to manipulate. Obviously.
"I would improve Dauntless by fostering true bravery instead of stupidity and brutality," I say. "Take out the knife throwing. Prepare people physically and mentally to defend the weak against the strong. That's what our manifesto encourages, ordinary acts of bravery. I think we should return to that. And then we can all hold hands and sing a song together, right?" Eric rolls his eyes. "You want to turn Dauntless into Amity?"
"No," I say. "I want to make sure we still know how to think for ourselves. Think about more than the next surge of adrenaline. Or just think, period. That way we can't be taken over or controlled from the outside."
"Sounds a little erudite to me," Eric says.
"The ability to think isn't exclusive to erudite," I snap. "The ability to think in stressful situations is what the fear simulations are supposed to develop."
All right," Max says, holding up his hands.
He looks troubled.
"Four, I'm sorry to say this, but you sound a little paranoid. Who would take us over or try to control us? The factions have coexisted peacefully for longer than you've been alive. There's no reason that's going to change now."
I open my mouth to tell him he's wrong. That the second he let Janine Matthews get involved in the affairs of our faction, the second he let her plant erudite loyal transfers into our initiation program, the second he started consulting with her on who to appoint as the next Dauntless leader, he compromised the system of checks and balances that has allowed us to coexist peacefully for so long. But then I realized that to tell him those things would be to accuse him of treason, and to reveal just how much I know. Max looks at me, and I read disappointment in his face. I know that he likes me more than Eric at least. But my mother was right yesterday. Max doesn't want someone like me, someone who can think for himself, develop his own agenda. He wants someone like Eric, who will help establish the new Dauntless agenda, who will be easy to manipulate simply because he's still under the thumb of Janine Matthews, someone with whom Max is closely aligned. My mother presented me with two options yesterday. Be a pawn of Dauntless, or become factionless. But there's a third option. To be neither. To align myself with no one in particular. To live under the radar and free. That's what I really want. To shed all the people who want to form and shape me one by one and learn instead to form and shape myself. To be honest, sir, I don't think this is the right place for me, I say calmly. I told you when you first asked me that I'd like to be an instructor, and I think I'm realizing more and more that that's where I belong.
Eric, will you excuse us, please?
Max says. Eric, barely able to suppress his glee, nods and leaves. I don't watch him go, but I would bet all my Dauntless credits that there's a little skip in his step as he walks down the hallway. Max gets up and sits next to me in the chair Eric just vacated.
I hope you're not saying this because I accused you of being paranoid, Max says. I was just concerned about you. I feared that the pressure was getting to you, making you stop thinking straight. I still think you're a strong candidate for leadership. You fit the right profile. You've demonstrated proficiency with everything we've taught you. And beyond that,
Quite frankly, you're more likable than some of our other promising candidates, which is important in a close working environment.
Thank you, I say.
But you're right, the pressure is getting to me. And the pressure, if I was actually a leader, would be much worse.
Max nods sadly.
Well,
he nods again.
If you'd like to be an initiation instructor, I will arrange that for you. But that seasonal work, where would you like to be placed for the rest of the year?
I was thinking, maybe the control room, I say. I've discovered that I enjoy working with computers. I don't think I would enjoy patrolling nearly as much.
Okay, Max says. Consider it done. Thank you for being honest with me.
I get up, and all I feel is relief. He seems concerned, sympathetic, not suspicious of me or my motives or my paranoia.
If you ever change your mind, Max says, please don't hesitate to tell me. We could always use someone like you.
Thank you, I say. And even though he's the worst faction traitor of anyone I've met, and probably responsible at least in part for Amar's death, I can't help but feel a little grateful to him for letting me go so easily. Eric is waiting for me around the corner. As I try to walk past him, he grabs my arm.
Careful, Eaton, he murmurs. If anything about my involvement with Erudite escapes you, you won't like what happens to you. You won't like what happens to you either, if you ever call me by that name again. Soon, I'm going to be one of your leaders, Eric says, smirking. And believe me, I am going to keep a very, very close eye on you and how well you implement my new training methods.
He doesn't like you. You know that? I say. Max, I mean. He'd rather have anyone else but you. He's not going to give you more than an inch in any direction, so good luck with your short leash. I wrench my arm from his grasp and walk toward the elevators.
Man, Shauna says, that is a bad day.
Yeah. She and I are sitting next to the chasm with our feet over the edge. I rest my head against the bars of the metal barrier that's keeping us from falling to our deaths and feel the spray of water against my ankles as one of the larger waves hits a wall. I told her about my departure from leadership training and Eric's threat, but I didn't tell her about my mother. How do you tell someone that your mother came back from the dead? All my life, someone has been trying to control me. Marcus was the tyrant of our house, and nothing happened without his permission. And then Max wanted to recruit me as his dauntless yes-man. And even my mother had a plan for me to join up with her when I reached a certain age to work against the faction system that she has a vendetta against for whatever reason. And just when I thought that I had escaped control altogether, Eric swooped in to remind me that if he became a dauntless leader, he would be watching me. All I have, I realize, are the small moments of rebellion I'm able to manage, just like when I was in abnegation collecting objects I found on the street. The tattoo that Tori is drawing on my back, the one that might declare me to be divergent, is one of those moments. I'll have to keep looking for more of them. More brief moments of freedom in a world that refuses to allow it. Where's Zeke? I say.
I don't know, she says. I haven't wanted to hang out with him much recently.
I look sideways at her. You could just tell him that you like him, you know. I honestly don't think he has a clue.
That's obvious, she says, snorting.
But what if this is what he wants? To just bounce around from girl to girl for a while? I don't want to be one of those girls he bounces to.
I seriously doubt you would be, I say, but fair enough. We sit quietly for a few seconds, both of us staring down at the raging water below.
You'll be a good instructor, she says.
You were really good at teaching me.
Thanks.
There you are, Zeke says from behind us. He's carrying a large bottle full of some kind of brown liquid, holding it by the neck. Come on, I found something.
Shauna and I look at each other and shrug, then follow him to the doors on the other side of the pit, the ones we first went through after jumping into the net. But instead of leading us toward the net, he takes us through another door. The lock is taped down with duct tape, and down a pitch-black corridor and a flight of stairs.
Should be coming up. Ouch!
Sorry, I didn't know you were stopping, Shauna says.
Hold on. Almost got it.
He opens a door, letting faint light in so we can see where we are. We're on the other side of the chasm, several feet above the water. Above us, the pit seems to go on forever, and the people milling around near the railing are small and dark, impossible to distinguish from this distance. I laugh. Zeke just led us into another small moment of rebellion, probably without meaning to.
How did you find this place?
Shauna says, with obvious wonder as she jumps down onto one of the lower rocks. Now that I'm here, I see a path that would carry us up and across the wall if we wanted to walk to the other side of the chasm.
That girl Maria, Zeke says. Her mom works in chasm maintenance. I didn't know there was such a thing, but apparently there is.
You still seeing her?
Shauna asks, trying to be casual.
Nah, Zeke says. Every time I was with her, I just kept getting the itch to be with friends instead. That's not a good sign, right?
No.
Shauna agrees, and she seems more cheerful than before. I lower myself more carefully onto the rock Shauna is standing on. Zeke sits next to her, opening his bottle and passing it around.
I heard you're out of the running, Zeke says when he passes it to me. Thought you might need a drink.
Yeah, I say, and then I take a swig.
Consider this act of public drunkenness as a big...
He makes an obscene gesture toward the glass ceiling above the pit. You know, to Max and Eric. And Evelyn, I think, as I take another swallow. I'll be working in the control room when I'm not training initiates, I say.
Awesome,
Zeke says. It'll be good to have a friend in there. Right now, no one talks to me. Sounds like me and my old faction, I say with a laugh. Imagine an entire lunch period in which no one even looks at you.
Ouch, Zeke says. Well, I bet you're glad to be here now, then.
I take the bottle from him again, drink another mouthful of stinging, burning alcohol, and wipe my mouth with the back of my hand. Yeah, I say. I am. If the factions are deteriorating as my mother would have me believe, this is not a bad place to watch them fall apart. At least here I have friends to keep me company while it happens. It's just after dark, and I have my hood up to hide my face as I run through the factionless area of the city right by the border it shares with the abnegation sector. I had to go to the school to get my bearings, but now I remember where I am, and where I ran that day that I barged into a factionless warehouse in search of a dying ember. I reach the door I walked through when I exited, and tap on it with my first knuckle. I can hear voices just beyond it, and smell food coming from one of the open windows where smoke from the fire is leaking into the alley. Footsteps, as someone comes to see what the knocking is about. This time the man is wearing a red Amity shirt and black Dauntless pants. He still has a towel tucked into his back pocket the same as the last time I spoke to him. He opens the door just enough to look at me and no farther.
Well, look who made a change, he said, eyeing my dauntless clothes. To what do I owe this visit? Did you miss my charming company?
You knew my mother was alive when you met me, I say. That's how you recognized me, because you've spent time with her. That's how you knew what she said about inertia carrying her to abnegation.
Yeah, the man said. Didn't think it was my business to be the one to tell you she was still alive. You here to demand an apology or something?
No, I say. I'm here to hand off a message. You'll give it to her?
Yeah, sure. I'll be seeing her in the next couple days.
I reach into my pocket and take out a folded piece of paper. I offer it to him. Go ahead and read it. I don't care, I say.
and thanks.
No problem, he says. Want to come in? You're starting to seem more like one of us than one of them, Eden.
I shake my head. I make my way back down the alley, and before I turn the corner, I see him opening up the note to read what it says. Evelyn. Someday. Not yet. 4. P.S. I'm glad you're not dead. The Traitor. Another year, another visiting day. 2 years ago, when I was an initiate, I pretended my own visiting day didn't exist, holed up in the training room with a punching bag. I was there for so long that I smelled the dust sweat for days afterwards. Last year, the first year I taught initiates, I did the same thing, though Zeke and Shauna both invited me to spend the day with their families instead. This year I have more important things to do than punch a bag and mope about my family's dysfunction. I'm going to the control room. I walk through the pit, dodging tearful reunions and shrieks of laughter. Families can always come together on visiting day, even if they're from different factions. But over time, they usually stop coming. Faction before blood, after all. Most of the mixed clothing I see belongs to transfer families. Will's erudite sister is dressed in light blue. Peter's candor parents are in black and white. For a moment, I watch his parents and wonder if they made him into the person he is. But most of the time, people aren't that easy to explain, I guess. I'm supposed to be on a mission, but I pause next to the chasm, pressing into the railing. Bits of paper float in the water. Now that I know where the steps cut into the stone in the opposite wall are, I can see them right away, and the hidden doorway that leads to them. I smile a little, thinking of the nights I've spent on those rocks with Zeke or Shauna, sometimes talking, and sometimes just sitting and listening to the water move. I hear footsteps approaching and look over my shoulder. Triss is walking toward me, tucked under the gray-clad arm of an abnegation woman. Natalie Pryor. I stiffen, suddenly desperate to escape. What if Natalie knows who I am, where I came from? What if she lets it slip here, surrounded by all these people? She can't possibly recognize me. I don't look anything like the boy she knew, lanky and slouched and buried in fabric. When she's close enough, she extends her hand. Hello. My name is Natalie. I'm Beatrice's mother. Beatrice. That name is so wrong for her. I clasp Natalie's hand and shake it. I've never been fond of dauntless handshaking. It's too unpredictable. You never know how tightly to squeeze, how many times to shake. 4, I say. It's nice to meet you. 4, Natalie says, and she smiles. Is that a nickname? Yes, I say. I change the subject. Your daughter is doing well here. I've been overseeing her training.
That's good to hear, she says. I know a few things about Dauntless Initiation, and I was worried about her.
I glance at Triss. There's color in her cheeks. She looks happy, like seeing her mother is doing her some good. For the first time, I fully appreciate how much she's changed since I first saw her tumbling onto the wooden platform, fragile-looking, like the impact with the net should have shattered her. She doesn't look fragile anymore, with the shadows of bruises on her face and a new stability in the way she stands, like she's ready for anything. You shouldn't worry, I say to Natalie. Triss looks away. I think she's still angry with me for the way I nicked her ear with that knife. I guess I don't really blame her.
You look familiar for some reason, Four, Natalie says.
I would think her comment was lighthearted if not for the way she's looking at me, like she's pinning me down. I can't imagine why, I say as coldly as I can manage. I don't make a habit of associating with the abnegation. She doesn't react the way I expect her to, with surprise or fear or anger. She just laughs.
Few people do these days. I don't take it personally.
If she does recognize me, she doesn't seem eager to say so. I try to relax. Well, I'll leave you to your reunion, I say. On my screen, the security footage switches from the lobby of the pyre to the hole hemmed in by four buildings, the initiate entrance to Dauntless. A crowd is gathered around the hole, climbing in and out of it, I assume to test the net.
Not into visiting day?
My supervisor, Gus, stands at my shoulder, sipping from a mug of coffee. He's not that old, but there's a bald spot at the crown of his head. He keeps the rest of his hair short, even shorter than mine. His earlobes are stretched around wide discs.
I didn't think I'd see you again until initiation was over.
Figured I might as well do something productive. On my screen, everyone crawls out of the hole and stands aside, their backs against one of the buildings. A dark figure inches toward the edge of the roof high above the hole, runs a few steps, and jumps off. My stomach drops like I'm the one falling, and the figure disappears beneath the pavement. I'll never get used to seeing that.
I seem to be having a good time,
Gus says, sipping his coffee again.
Well, you're always welcome to work when you're not scheduled to, but it's not a crime to go and have some mindless fun for.
He walks away and I mumble, so I'm told. I look over the control room. It's almost empty. On visiting day, only a few people are required to work, and it's usually the oldest ones. Gus is hunched over his screen. Two others flank him, scanning through footage with their headphones half on, half off. And then there's me. I type in a command, calling up the footage I saved last week. It shows Max in his office, sitting at his computer. He pokes at the keys with an index finger, hunting for the right ones for several seconds between jabs. Not many of the Dauntless know how to type properly, especially Max, who I'm told spent most of his Dauntless time patrolling the factionless sector with a gun at his side. He must not have anticipated that he would ever need to use a computer. I lean close to the screen to make sure that the numbers I took down earlier are accurate. If they are, I have Max's account password written on a piece of paper in my pocket. Ever since I realized that Max was working closely with Janine Matthews and began to suspect that they had something to do with Amar's death, I've been looking for a way to investigate further. When I saw him type in his password the other day, I found one. 084628. Yes, the numbers look right. I call up the live security footage again and cycle through the camera feeds until I find the ones that show Max's office in the hallway beyond it. Then I type the command to take the footage of Max's office out of the rotation so Gus and the others won't see it. It will only play on my screen. The footage from the whole city is always divided by however many people are in the control room, so we aren't all looking at the same feeds. We're only supposed to pull footage from the general rotation like that for a few seconds at a time if we need a closer look at something. But hopefully this won't take me long. I slip out of the room and walk toward the elevators. This level of the pyre is almost empty. Everyone is gone. That will make it easier for me to do what I have to do. I ride the elevator up to the 10th floor and walk purposefully towards Max's office. I've found that when you're sneaking around, it's best not to look like you're sneaking around. I tap the flash drive in my pocket as I walk and turn the corner toward Max's office. I nudge the door open with my shoe. Earlier today, after I was sure he had gone to the pit to start visiting day preparations, I'd crept up here and taped the lock. I close the door quietly behind me, not turning on the lights, and crouch next to his desk. I don't want to move the chair to sit in it. I don't want him to see that anything about this room has changed when he gets back. The screen prompts me for a password. My mouth feels dry. I take the paper from my pocket and press it flat to the desktop while I type it in. 084628. The screen shifts. I can't believe it worked. Hurry.
If Gus discovers that I'm gone, that I'm here, I don't know what I'll say. What excuse I could possibly give that would sound reasonable. I insert the flash drive and transfer the program I put there earlier. I asked Lauren, one of the Dauntless technical staff and my fellow initiation instructor, for a program that would make one computer mirror another, under the pretense that I wanted to prank Zeke when we were at work. She was happy to help. Another thing I've discovered is that the Dauntless are always up for a prank, and rarely looking for a lie. With a few simple keystrokes, the program is installed and buried somewhere in Max's computer that I'm sure he would never bother to access. I put the flash